Meshach Asari, welcome to Worldviews.
Thank you.
Well, first of all, Meshach, I want to congratulate you on winning the 2015 NSK Newsstat Prize for Children's Literature. And so I wanted to start just by asking you, since this is an award for children's literature, and you've obviously written a number of children's books, kind of what drew you to writing children's books? Because you're not only a writer, you're an illustrator as well. And so what drew you to that area of literature?
Well, it started when I was a child myself, actually. I quite often saw my own father reading. He loved to read. I think I was lucky in that sense. He had magazines and books, history books usually. But there weren't books for children. And I also realized some of the magazines that he had pictures in them, colored pictures especially. There wasn't anything like that, except school textbooks when I started school. And those books were actually textbooks meant for you to learn to read English and write, and were not as interesting. What actually drew me into writing for children, finally, I studied art. So now I'm studying art. How about writing? Trying also to write so that I can make books for children. So that is actually how it initially came, you know, together, and drew my attention to. It began with there not being children's books or the kinds that I would have loved as a child, and then being asked to illustrate a book for children. And that I had studied art, now I'm able to draw. Now how about also writing, you know, combining these with the aim to produce a really beautiful book. And that's how it started.
So you mentioned you're from Ghana. That's where you're born and raised. And so do you have a bit of a tradition there in terms of if you didn't have children's books, you told stories. Did you didn't have anything to read necessarily, but I presume that, I mean, you sound like your father was a reader, so that you had those around who perhaps told you stories. And was your ambition perhaps to take some of these stories that you know, these kind of, you know, lessons, if you will, and I'm going to get to your book that you won for, because I think there's some lessons in that book, but lessons that were perhaps told orally and then put them down on paper and to provide them for children with mm-hmm. pictures, with mm-hmm. illustrations.
Mm-hmm. That only came later, but it is true. It's a fact that I heard and enjoyed a lot of stories, folk tales, actually, not from reading mainly, but from actually hearing these told by my grandparents. I was lucky again, because they knew a lot of these stories, and they visited from the villages, and I think most of the stories telling was actually done, you know, in the villages and farming villages, not in the towns and in the cities. But they visited us quite often, and it was storytelling time whenever they were there. But despite that, when I actually decided to try and write for children, I was more interested in showing, you know, children in the form of a book that also was about them, in environments that they actually could recognize that, yes, that is this, and that is this beach, and that is a canoe, and, you know, something that was very close to them, and they could realize that they could also see themselves playing roles and engaging in activities that they were familiar in. And I think I was actually comparing, you know, that possibility to the sort of books that we got from the UK, for example, about Jack and Jill, you know, about snow, this and that, you know, doing things that they were quite familiar with. That is actually where, you know, I started. It because my first main engagement was that part of the identity, where I am and what I am and what I do. And it was the beginning, and I think it came out in that first book called Terrier Goes to Sea, which was published in 1970. And it went on after that. It was much later, I think, the third or fourth book that I switched to the folk tales.
So I like that you raised the term identity, and that your purpose was to create something that would allow children to identify with their environment, and that even though it's fiction, it's a made up story, perhaps it's still relevant to them, and that they can identify with it. Well, the book that is being honored now, Kwajo and the Brassman's Secret. This is a very interesting book where you're kind of teaching a lesson about choosing kind of wisdom over a temptation to become rich. So not only something that children can identify with, but perhaps an important lesson for them to learn. Can you tell us a little bit about that story in that book, and where did that come from? Why write about wisdom over riches?
Well, it has its roots in, or the feeling, strong feeling again, that if we already knew about something, it also helped us to add to it, that we could learn, and add more based on what we already knew. But I was growing up, and I had a chance to visit my grandmother living far away somewhere in another part of the, and saw men, producing these figures, these gold weights, and was quite interested in how they made them initially, that the technical or technicalities of it, that they took clay and made it into this, and then took wax and actually modeled the wax into figures, and finally turning it into metal. That was quite fascinating in itself. But it was not enough, because they only produced them to sell. They weren't interested in. But I knew that these figures were not just made for no reason. Okay, that they meant something. Each of them had a meaning. It told, some of them actually told entire stories. So then why were these men making them only to sell, when people didn't even know what they actually mean anymore? That was a question initially. And then it went further to asking myself, why don't I too know what all of these wonderful figures mean? And from then on, I think it became an obsession. I actually got myself a collection, so that I could hold and twist my hands. And then I learned more and realized what they meant, that they were made for a purpose, for specific purpose of measuring, weighing gold dust, which was the currency of the time, but it just accumulated over the years into several thousand, actually. Okay. And then I imagine, well, so it means if you have all of these different bits and pieces together, the little figurines, you have entire stories and entire histories and entire proverbs and plenty of them. And then it became useful, the importance and the value of it, got heavier in my mind, and also clearer that, yes, this is something to actually know about. There's something to learn about. The part of it telling about knowledge over money, let's say, okay, that was just part of it. Because some of the figures actually were telling proverbs about things that were not sensible to do, like carrying gunpowder and smoking, for example, and also like trying to do everything all by yourself. You know, a man scraping the bark of trees to make medicine, for example, that he couldn't expect to be able to gather it all. You know, some would drop on the things like that. And from this, it just came that, okay, how about getting a story, creating a story in which this boy, the main character, protagonist, would have to solve, you know, a puzzle, something at the end of which he could be rewarded. It was just the necessity of creating a plot. And then it resulted in that wonderful, you know, moral.
Yeah, I was going to say the lesson, the moral of the story. Yeah, every story has a point. There's some sort of moral you're learning from that story. But digging a little deeper behind something that was purely meant for commerce and looking at kind of the lessons and the understanding that can come from that, the wisdom that can come from that. Yeah. Well, so, Meshach, just very quickly, I have to ask you, I mean, obviously being from Africa, and you mentioned that there, you know, wasn't, at least during your childhood, much in the way of children's literature. I mean, what are the struggles that that African authors face today? I mean, do you see a real growth in the in literature, in the field of literature, in countries around Africa, a very big and diverse continent, obviously? Are there any kind of, you know, places where authors still struggle to get their work out, or is the internet and the way in which we can connect today really providing a lot of outlet for African authors today?
Well, I think in one sense things have improved. In the sense that through the media and new technology, you know, that African people now hear about African writers. I think most recognition that African writers receive today are still from outside, from abroad, rather than people are still not readers, don't have the reading culture, you know, is not as developed or as robust as, you know, in the West. Very few people still actually buy books. They rather would sit and watch the television and hear, you know, the news and things like that. And again, I think people are still poor, and they would buy, or if they have the money, they would spend it on a book which would enable their children to pass the common entrance examination and maybe get a scholarship or things like that. They still face the difficulty, and then all the boundaries, you know, the French on one side and the Portuguese on one side. I don't think publishers are able to produce and sell, you know, across Africa as it should be possible to do in Europe and in America, for example. So the boundaries are still there, the constraints still exist, and it impacts on writing and on authors still. It hasn't changed by that much, except, of course, as I said initially, the digital, you know, possibilities enable writers, African writers, to be heard about much more around the world than before.
Well, very interesting, Meshach. Thank you so much for being here. We all look forward to reading your work. And again, congratulations on your award.